The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention. The court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three causes on its oral submission docket. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. City of Sherman versus Otis Henry from Grayson County. Continental Coffee Products Company and Alan D. Duff versus Juanita Cesares from Harris County. And William Walker and Deborah Walker versus Joyce Harris and Donald Harris from Waller County. In each of these causes, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present arguments. Petitioners may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and we'll conclude all of these arguments before our lunch break. These arguments are being recorded by the court. If you desire to purchase a tape of the argument, please make application with our clerk. We are ready to hear argument from petitioner in City of Sherman versus Henry.
May it please the court, Mr. Ron Clark will be presenting.
May it please the court, my name is Ron Clark of Sherman, Texas, and I'm representing the city of Sherman in this case. Ironically, we're here on Valentine's Day to decide whether adultery is a constitutionally protected right. It's constitutionally protected to the extent that a chief of police cannot decide that he has a valid reason to pass an officer over for promotion when that officer is having an adulterous affair with a police dispatcher in the same department who is married to another police officer in that department.
Hey, Captain, let me interrupt you for a second, and you may want to come back to your constitutional arguments, but let me ask you this. Do you think that it would be possible to resolve this case without addressing the constitutional issues, by addressing only the issues about whether or not the police department has the right to not promote someone on the basis of what is good or bad for morale without getting into the constitutional issue?
That would be possible, especially given the evidence of disruption in this particular case.
What evidence that the city submitted of disruption?
Right. You first of all have, I think, as a matter of law, the disruption between the three individuals involved. You have the disruption of the relationship between Officer Henry and Officer Pollard. You have the disruption of the relationship where both employees.
And then you what have, evidence, you know, you were talking about matters of law, but what evidence of disruption was submitted?
The evidence was that when Pollard found out about this affair, on one or two occasions, he came very close to trying to hunt down Henry and start a fight with him. You also have the evidence of Officer Pollard and how upset he was when he found out about it and disrupted the relationship between himself and his wife, who again are both employees of the department. Then you have the evidence of Sergeant Blankenship, who was a shift sergeant, who testified that the men on his shift were discussing the matter, taking sides on the matter, going back and forth on the matter. Then you have the evidence of Officer Henry himself, who, and this is ironic, complained to the chief that he was being harassed by other officers because of his affair. And one of the examples was this poster that was going around, if you can't trust an officer with your wife, how can you trust him with your life?
That was posted somewhere in the building?
Well, the Court of Appeals, and it's very interesting, said it was just posted in one place, but the record is quite clear that it was put in a bulletin board, it was put in mailboxes of various officers, and Officer Henry's letter of complaint said that it was on at least two different occasions in a number of different places. So even though, and I pointed out in my brief, but I think the Court of Appeals, perhaps I didn't point it out clearly enough to them, but misread that. Then you have the evidence of the chief himself when he testified talking about the disruption that would occur when you promote someone who is involved in this, involved in an adulterous affair like this.
Was there ever any discipline against Olson and Pollard for keeping their marriage secret?
No. There was not discipline for keeping their marriage secret because there was no...
I thought there was a written policy against officers being married. Is that incorrect?
They understood that, but that was not correct. In other words, for some reason, and I'm not sure how that happened, they understood that there was supposed to be some kind of discipline would be taken against them, but they were not both police officers. So I do not think that that would have...
They were not both police officers?
Well, one is a dispatcher, so that's not a certified peace officer. Had both of them been peace officers, I think there might have been, there could have been some problem, but they were not both, they're members of the department, but not both peace officers. A radio dispatcher is not a peace officer, but she was working for the, in the same department, in the same building.
I might have interrupted you. Did you finish the evidence?
Well, the additional evidence is the evidence of the chief of police about the disruption that would occur, and then finally the evidence of the expert witness, Mr. Barber, who was a professor or teacher of criminal justice, who also pointed out that when you have this kind of a situation, it is going to lead to a disruption in morale.
Does your case depend on proof of actual disruption?
No, it doesn't. Because what we're talking about is a promotion in the future, and when you're dealing with a paramilitary organization like this, you have to be concerned about what is going to happen. The fact is that there is evidence of actual disruption, but I think just the evidence of what is likely to occur, and in the opinion of these experts, the chief and and Mr. Barber, of what is likely to occur, when we're talking about discretion, and that's what we are dealing with here. The chief of police should have the discretion in a matter of promotion. And we're dealing with, as this court pointed out in the Texas Employers MHMR case, a different situation than other kinds of employees, other kinds of public employees. These are employees directly dealing with public safety.
And because of that, isn't the standard of review different?
I believe so. I believe that a deferential standard has to be, and not just I believe, the courts have stated, both federal courts and state courts have stated the standard of review is much more deferential to the chief of police and the administrative agency.
Do you think the Court of Appeals followed that standard of review?
No, I don't. I think it is quite clear from their opinion that they did not follow even the substantial evidence rule standard of review. They reviewed the entire case, both facts and law, de novo. And the examples of that are when they said there was virtually no evidence of disruption, only one notice posted on one bulletin board. And, for example, they said, well, the chief was asked whether or not an affair between Officer Pollard and another officer would result in discipline to him. And then the Court of Appeals said, the chief said, well, it would depend on the situation. The question the chief was asked was, by Mr. Richardson, what would happen if Officer Pollard haven't had an affair with a deputy sheriff? Well, that's a different department. That's a complete different agency. And the chief said it would depend on the situation. We're not dealing with a case here of a chief trying to interfere with the personal sexual lives of everyone on the department. And we're not dealing with a case where he's trying to say, well, you can't have sex with anybody outside the department. You can't. It's not that kind of control. What we're focusing on here is all three persons involved are in the department, and it's disrupting the department itself.
So your position then is you're not worried about who can have sex with whom. What you're worried about is what type of conduct impacts morale.
In the department, that's right. And I think it was quite clear from that question that he was not trying to interfere with the privacy right outside of the department. I mean, that is a different case that we don't have to address right here. But I think...
Are all three individuals still within the department?
Yes, they are. All three of them. And ironically, after Mr. and Mrs. Pollard got divorced after this incident, they later on remarried. Subsequently, Sergeant Henry came up on another promotion list and was promoted to sergeant. And I think the question here
is that in the record?
No, because it happened after the fact. It happened while the case is on appeal. I think it's
mentioned. So this case may be moot. He wanted to be a sergeant. He's a sergeant already in the city.
That part of the case is moot, but he is still seeking the back pay and wages from the time with which he was a sergeant, which is something like a year, plus the attorney's fees. So for that purpose, is not moot. The one issue.
But he is already a sergeant for the city of Sherman.
Yes. But, and I think that's the point, is there was a change in chiefs of police, too, at that time, or prior to that time. All that happened here was he was not told he could never be promoted. The order of the Civil Service Commission was, we're going to uphold the chief and we'll return his name to the promotion list. The idea being, if he can ever learn self-control, if he can ever learn the self-discipline to keep his hands off the spouses of other officers, the rest of his record is quite good.
Do you think there's any parameters to the chief's discretion in determining a valid reason?
I think there are going to be outside parameters, just like we have when you review a lower court's case for abuse of discretion. There are outside parameters, but that's what we're talking about, is abuse of discretion, and those parameters are quite wide.
Let me ask you this: what if the chief of police decided that it would be bad for morale to hire someone of a different race or something like that?
There we're talking about a status, not a conduct. And I think you're into an entirely different kind of analysis. I think that would not be allowed, but that is a constitutionally protected status. And no case has ever held that pure adultery is a constitutionally protected conduct. We're talking about voluntary conduct, which does not go to either marriage, abortion, or contraception. And those are the areas involving sex that have been protected by various cases.
Under the Texas Constitution?
Under both, the cases I've read, both the Texas and the federal Constitution.
This is brought under the Texas Constitution, is it not?
Yes, it is, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that he also urged, as a secondary matter, federal constitutional issues, which is why I'm addressing both.
What about the argument that there were no written guidelines or written policies about what was inbounds and what was out of bounds?
I think the Fifth Circuit addresses that in a case called Shago versus Stradlin, which is in my brief. And it basically says that fair notice may sometimes be required, but it may be well impossible for the mind to imagine or the hand to transcribe every sort of human misconduct that might fairly call for discipline. And if we're going to say that you can do anything that isn't written down, you're going to wind up with discipline manuals and policy manuals that are huge, and in effect wind up not getting followed. You can't possibly think of every kind of conduct. And when you're talking about interference with the marriage relationship, and the marriage relationship between Mr. and Mrs. Pollard is a legally recognized, almost contractual legal relationship which is constitutionally protected, and to say that Officer Henry didn't know that he should not interfere with that, I think once again gets into the chief's discretion of, well, then he doesn't have enough common sense and understanding of the law to be a sergeant.
Is there any evidence in the record that he even knew they were married?
Yes, there is.
That's a disputed fact.
No, it is not. I had filed this morning, and I think each of you should have a copy of a listing of a chronology of the facts. And counsel, in his response to my motion for summary judgment, basically said that for the purpose of this summary judgment, these facts are accepted as true. And it is true that Sergeant Pollard married her on September 3rd, that the affair began before the marriage was announced as public. They were living together, but they weren't publicly announcing their marriage. They announced their marriage, and the affair continued. And it continued from July 91 to February of 92, when the Pollards finally got divorced. And I think that's the crux of the matter, continuing on with this affair, knowing that they're married. Henry admitted that the affair was still going on as of the time of the civil service hearing. So it was going on, that's what's so odd about this case. All these facts are uncontested, and they rely completely on the idea that adultery is a constitutionally protected right.
If they weren't married, does it make any difference?
If the two Pollards weren't married, I think in that case what you'd have is...
If various members of the police, of this police force, are having sexual intercourse with one another, Is that a change?
I think if you're having various members of the department are having sex with each other on their own time, off duty, with no disruption of the department, then you are going to be getting into a protected area of privacy.
Well, you say with no disruption, you say here your case doesn't depend on actual disruption, but I guess on anticipated disruption because of the marital relationship.
Well,
are you saying it's different if they're not married?
I think when you interfere with the marital relationship, you have a much stronger anticipation of disruption than you do when you just have boyfriend, girlfriend, or unrelated people. But even in the case of people having sex on their own time off duty and they're unmarried, if it starts deteriorating their performance on the job, if they're fighting with each other, for example,
you would need actual disruption.
I think you'd have to have some showing that, and I think some of the cases, the federal cases especially, say that you're going to have some kind of showing of something, rather than merely an affair that happened in the past that was legal.
But the fact these folks are married gives the chief the discretion not to promote based upon anticipated disruption. Is that correct?
That's not the facts we have here. Well, you're assuming there's no evidence, but yes, I think that the fact that they are married, and the one way that you might get around that is if it was quite clear that the husband and wife consented to bring in this third person, you had a consensual menage a trois, then perhaps that wouldn't be the chief's problem.
So then you'd have to have actual disruption.
I think in that kind of a case, whether the court is going to go to the point of saying that that is a constitutionally protected activity, I don't know. But that would be, I guess, an outside limit that you could look at.
You say in your brief that promotion or delay of promotion calls for a different standard than termination. Do you have case authority for that distinction?
No, I don't. No, I think we are looking at different issues, though. When you talk about taking away someone's job and livelihood as compared with the fact that...
That has some common sense appeal to it, but in terms of the government taking action over and against an asserted constitutional right, the government taking action or not taking action, is there any distinction that other cases have drawn between the severity of the...
I have not found a case where that balancing was made, but there are a number of cases where the balancing is different because it involves discipline in a police department. And I think there would be a difference between firing somebody because of the severity, that kind of discipline in the police department, and temporarily holding back on the promotion.
Did I understand you to say that Kelly Olson and Tom Pollard got married, didn't announce their marriage, and then the adulterous affair, and then divorce, and now remarried again? Who is she married to, cop number one or cop number two?
She was married to Mr. Pollard.
Yes.
And I don't know if you have this one-page summary.
Yes. Go ahead and ask the question.
She was married to Officer Pollard. The adulterous affair starts, it's announced, it continues on, Henry is denied his promotion, and then this next part is not strictly in the record because it happened, I'm sorry, that this part is. After Henry is denied his promotion, Kelly and Pollard are divorced. That's after all the promotion is denied. But the affair had continued on during that time. The chief makes his decision to deny the promotion based on this man not having common sense enough to avoid this kind of entanglement. And then they get divorced. Now, as it happens, later on, while this case has been on appeal, Kelly and Pollard have remarried, a new chief has come in, Henry comes back up on the list, the affair has stopped, and he's promoted. But that last set of facts came up on appeal.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Richardson, Jr. will be presenting an argument for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. If I appear nervous despite my age, after having been licensed through the imprimatur of this court for 30 years, this is my first appearance in this honorable court. And if my average keeps up, my next appearance will be in 2025, but it is an honor to be here. And I'm awed and humbled by finally getting to argue a case for this court. The facts of this case drive it, and the facts of this case drive it hard. The Dallas Court of Appeals is certainly no bastion of liberalism, and in fact, the opinion of the court below leaves holes that most public employers can drive a truck through if they will simply develop written rules and regulations that make some sense and have some useful purpose. The facts are not just somewhat exaggerated by the city in the chart that is now before the court, are totally misconstrued.
If there's a constitutional right here, as you assert, how does developing a written policy negate that constitutional right? I understand if our argument was due process. If your argument was a due process one, that is, you can't fire somebody and, without them knowing in advance, or you can't not promote somebody without them knowing in advance what the parameters are going to be. But that's not your argument.
That is not my argument. It is the position, apparently, Justice Phillips, of the Dallas Court.
You disagree with that?
I do.
You think if that there was a constitutional right being exercised here by Mr. Henry, and that no written policy, I mean, the written policy, in fact, would make it easier to challenge it from a constitutional standpoint.
In a somewhat different proceeding, but certainly it would. Yes, Your Honor.
All right. I just wanted to make sure I understood you disagree with the CA opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. So you are saying that there is a constitutional right to have sex with whomever you want, and you should not be denied a promotion simply because you're having sex with that person. Is that your position?
I believe that position, Constitution, Justice Abbott.
All right. And wouldn't you say then that a person has a constitutional right to have sex with their spouse?
No question about it.
But yet, this particular police department has the right to not only not promote, but to not hire someone simply because they are married to someone already in the department.
That's questionable. I do not believe that issue has been decided. The Dallas court, as a matter of fact, just before we argued this case, had upheld such an ordinance in one of the Dallas area, not an ordinance, but such a rule in one of the Dallas area cities, but no constitutional challenge had been made. I believe that issue has yet to be addressed in the state. If I'm wrong, forgive me.
So if we follow your analogy or perhaps your analysis, then that would lead us down a road of overturning nepotism policies as being unconstitutional.
I think there is a rationale and a rule of reason. Within particularly a small department, say that a police captain, male or female, is married to a police patrolman, false employee. I think the city should have the right, without running afoul of the Constitution, to prevent the mischief that type of situation would cause.
How is a marital relationship, in terms of the mischief you just alluded to, any different from a serious, ongoing, non-marital relationship, or even an infatuation?
Well, number one, it must be remembered that Kelly Olson was not a police officer. She was a civilian employee, a secretary, dispatcher, desk work. She was not a sworn police officer, was not supervised by police personnel. At any rate, the reason I say that this case is driven hard by the undisputed facts, and the facts are undisputed, Officer Henry, who going outside the record just a little more, is now Lieutenant Henry. I don't know if counsel knew that, but and incidentally, the
given the change in everybody's status, has there been any attempt to mediate this case by the plaintiff and the city?
Not by the city. The plaintiff has, of course, made many settlement overtures over the years, but the city seems adamant that it wants a final and binding decision.
If there were evidence of actual disruption, one officer said, I just can't work with this person anymore, given what's happened, would that justify the conduct, the decision here?
We have made a point in the brief, we've made a point in the argument in court below. Yes, it would then be arguable. Here's the problem, though. if a constitutionally protected right was being exercised, which offended the chief and which offended the brother officers. Now granted, again, if the city had put 25 police patrolmen on the stand, or 10, saying, I can't possibly work for this guy, I've lost respect for him, I couldn't possibly follow his orders, and I'd run the risk of being fired myself for insubordination before I... Then there is at least an arguing point. That didn't happen. But
somewhere between that level of evidence and what we have here is the line.
But nevertheless, how about a constitution? Suppose, for instance, that a person of the Jewish faith were first in line for promotion, and those same 10 or 25 cops took the stand after the chief had made the decision, I can't possibly promote this person because it would destroy the morale and efficiency of the department.
Is this right to privacy that you claim exists here then on the same level of strict scrutiny as race or religion or ethnicity, in your opinion?
I'll concede, Justice Phillips, that there are probably first, second, and third level constitutional rights and constitutional privileges, but
the federal system.
I can't cite, Your Honor, any cases.
Well, I mean, you're asking us to write it. Well, maybe you didn't ask for it, but you got it.
Yes.
What level of protection should we accord to this constitutional right if we find that it exists in this case? No, we are well familiar with it, and our law is settled as it is in the federal system. If this person were being passed over for promotion because they were a member of a certain racial group, what type of justification the government would have to shove to uphold that decision? And it is, of course, deservedly very high. Now, what type of justification would have to be shown to uphold the government's decision in the face of this asserted constitutional right?
I don't think any court, and particularly this honorable court, has to find a justification to uphold and enforce the Constitution of the state of Texas or of the United States of America in protecting individual rights, any protected individual
rights.
Well,
maybe I obviously didn't state the question well. A distinction can be made on virtually any ground if there is a sufficiently compelling governmental reason to do so.
Precisely.
And racial character, racial distinctions can be made by the government with a sufficiently compelling grounds for that. Now, what degree of compulsion, of compelling grounds, must the government show to make a distinction on the constitutional grounds you assert here? What level of scrutiny, I guess?
Basically, you're asking me to argue the city of Sherman's side of the case. I don't know. Presumably, if we're shown that Officer Henry were a sexual addict and had, notwithstanding it was on his private time, attempting to seduce the wife and or girlfriend of every police officer on the force, we might be getting into a situation where his mental capacity could be challenged, but nevertheless, from a sexual standpoint, I presume that some basis could be developed along those lines, which would justify the city in interfering in the officer's private life, inquiring into his private legal conduct.
So I gather, we're getting fairly far afield here, but I gather from what you say that you see your constitutional right you assert here running headlong into a lot of the sexual harassment laws and policies that the government has developed.
Well, I wasn't thinking in terms of sexual harassment. Let's assume
this man was
a Romeo of some kind, and that many of these wives and or girlfriends were very willing But he's nevertheless made it a goal to just run through the department and seduce every wife on the department. I cannot imagine a situation, particularly in Henry's. Henry never knew while the affair was going on that he was doing anything other than dating and trying to win a single and eligible lady.
But after he found out, he continued the relationship.
He did not. That is a misstatement by the city. I was there. I made the stipulation. Please explain it to Your Honor.
Well, you can make an explanation. They cite the transcript here, transcript 78, lines 155 to 156. Are you familiar with that particular passage of the statement of fact?
Well, I don't have it memorized. Could the court assist me?
No, I will look it up. Go ahead and make your explanation.
The stipulation that was made in the administrative tribunal was that sexual liaison had occurred between the two of them prior to the announcement of marriage. And then, of course, the court's well familiar with the letter from Henry after the marriage was announced, I'm out of your life, so forth, so forth. Then it was further stipulated that it resumed, but if you look in the record, Your Honor,
it resumed at the point after he found out she was married to another officer.
Oh, yes, but after she was divorced. The city attorney says, can we further stipulate that it is ongoing? This was in April 17th, 1992. And I believe I stated on the record, do you mean by that last night? And he said, yes. And I said, we'll stipulate. Ms. Pollard was divorced in February 1992, and that's in the record.
How about July, between July 91 to February 92?
That was not part of the stipulation. If it appears as part of the testimony of Ms. Pollard, I'm just not certain.
Counsel, may I best follow up? I'd like to follow up on a question Justice Heck asked earlier. I think you said that if there were a personality conflict among officers for whatever reason, and there were actual disruption on the police force as a result of that personality conflict, that is something that the chief could take into consideration in whether to bypass an officer for a promotion. Did I state that correctly?
I hope I didn't state. If anything I said left the impression that personality conflicts between officers would justify the...
Well, maybe I added that. As far as the actual disruption among officers is something that could be taken into account. You agree with that, don't you?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
And
certainly concede.
Whether it's caused by a personality conflict or by someone says I has no respect for this person, can't work with them, that's something that the chief could take into account. Would you agree with that?
I suppose, Your Honor, the chief could, but
if that's true, then what difference does it make that the personality conflict occurred because an officer was having sexual intercourse with another person there at the police department?
The difference under the undisputed evidence, this was private, legal, consensual conduct.
But even if it resulted in actual disruption, it's still protected, can't take it into consideration.
The disruption, as a matter of fact, occurred some 6 months after the fact, after a divorce was on file, shortly before it was finalized. And only when Officer Henry was number one on the promotion list, then and only then did Sergeant Pollard, who saw on the horizon, and as it turns out, prophesied correctly, a very fierce competitor for promotion to lieutenant, and the opportunity to utilize a situation that had existed 6 months prior to that fact to derail the man's career. It's just that simple. And indeed, the expert, instead of putting on 15 police officers to say we're disrupted and we don't respect Officer Henry, they had to bring in a junior college law enforcement instructor as an expert to say, hey, this is disruptive. It has a bad effect on morale. But even he, what if Officer Henry didn't know they were married? What if Officer Henry thought he were legally courting an eligible victim? Well, that might be a different story.
Counsel, do you not concede that there was some evidence of disruption?
Yes, I concede there was evidence of disruption. Sergeant Pollard was certainly disrupted. Yeah, the evidence is very strong, I think circumstantially convincing, that Sergeant Pollard is the guy that packed up the poster, as a matter of fact. Sergeant Pollard was disrupted. That's part of the job. Police officers upset one another every day of the week. I would presume that even members of this court occasionally have disagreements and are upset and disrupted, but I'm sure it's very temporary and folks get over it. It simply is not grounds, and certainly not grounds enough, to deny Officer Henry the constitutional protection, his private life, his totally private life, his legal, consensual private life was entitled to receive.
How large is the Sherman police force?
Around 60 uniformed sworn police officers, I believe, Justice Spector.
Lieutenant Henry, now a lieutenant, and how about Mr. Pollard?
Mr. Pollard, still a sergeant.
So Mr. Lieutenant Henry now has supervised capacity over the Pollard, Sergeant Pollard?
That's correct. And incidentally, the police captain who testified, we expect folks to be professional. We expect this is a paramilitary organization. We expect folks to obey the lawful orders of their superior. If they don't, we have rules having to do with insubordination to take care of that. He's now the chief.
Besides this interesting legal issue in terms of, which is very important, in terms of relief that you're seeking attorney's fees and you're seeking the increased salary that your client did not receive had it been promoted timely? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
How much money are we talking about?
Oh.
Approximately, ballpark.
It's written in the judgment. It's four-figure, a fairly low four-figure amount.
$5,000? $10,000?
Less than that.
Less than that?
The important thing here, Your Honor, I suggest is the
legal
institution.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
May it please the court. I think one thing we're getting away from in all this argument analysis is, I think the Court of Appeals stated it, that Mr. Henry has the burden of showing that a privacy interest was implicated in the first place. Because all conduct, even if it's sexual, is not necessarily private or protected by privacy. Prostitution, for example, sex with minors, for example, fornication in public. So he has the burden of showing that...
But that conduct is illegal, and adultery is no longer illegal in Texas.
But they're still not constitutionally protected. Just because something is illegal wouldn't mean... I mean, a state could pass a law saying something is illegal, and many of those laws have been overturned over the years. So that's the idea that just because something involves sex doesn't make it necessarily private. And I think if we go back to one of the seminal cases, Roe versus Wade, when they talk about, they say it is clear that only, and I emphasize the word only, personal rights that can be deemed fundamental or implicit in the concept of ordered liberty are included in this guarantee of personal privacy.
Why isn't adultery one of those fundamental rights.
Can we really say that adultery, where you're interfering with a constitutionally protected relationship of others, is a fundamental or an implicit right in a concept of ordered liberty? Because adultery, per se, is interfering with the rights of two other people. The marriage, contract, and relationship of those two other people, which is constitutionally protected. And for this court now to come up with an opinion granting adultery privacy right status says that now adultery is fundamental to our concept of ordered liberty. And I think, then what do you say, okay, then what is marriage? Because adultery is the antithesis of marriage. And I don't see how you can say, when you're not just having a relationship with one other person, but you're also affecting a third person, that you're now into the realm of privacy. You've already got three people. Griswold talks about the sanctity of marriage, and contraception should be allowed between a married couple, because that's one of the highest callings, one of the noblest purposes of our society. And the same with Roe versus Wade, where you're talking about the woman's right to herself. But here you have a man interfering with a relationship, and unlike the recent JWT, in the interest of JWT case, you don't have the concern of the father who has had the child by the other woman. You have simply a relationship.
Some of the interference was invited.
It's invited by the woman, but not the man. And I will grant you, I'm not sure what would happen if both the husband and the wife had invited him into their bed. I haven't worked that through in my mind yet, what the chief could do with something like that, since bigamy is illegal. I guess I can't reach that imagination.
We'll save that for another case.
Yes.
Have you come across any authority where any state court has held that there's a right of privacy that protects adultery?
No, I haven't. And the one case in my brief where the court specifically says adultery is not protected, the Bauer versus Hardwick of the United States in 1986 said consensual sodomy is not protected, and I believe that in a footnote they mentioned that adultery is one of the things that is not protected. But I've found no case that just the pure concept of adultery has constitutional protected. And if there is some kind of privacy interest implicated here, I think we are not talking about strict scrutiny where you're, as you would with race or religion. If there is anything at all, at the very least, you're talking about a rational relationship type test, and that's where we get back down to the discretion of the chief of police. You know, consider the policy implications of the Court of Appeals opinion and upholding that opinion. First, adultery becomes a constitutionally protected right, and it takes precedence over the legal relationship of marriage. It becomes part of our fundamental concept of ordered liberty. Second, police departments, the chief of police, must ignore common sense. And Your Honor, to ask me, is there any authority for the proposition that you treat promotion different than other kinds of discipline? The civil service law itself does that. It says that a chief of police may pass over for promotion an officer if he has a valid reason, but he cannot discipline them, fire them, or suspend them unless it's a certain specified reason set out of a violation of certain specified rules set out in the civil service law. So the civil service law itself makes that distinction between promotion and other kinds of discipline. I appreciate the court's time on this. We'd ask that the case be reversed and rendered, and that attorney's fees be also rendered on the trust.
I have one quick question. Is there any evidence in the record other than that you cited on this document that Officer Henry knew at the time that it was an adulterous relationship?
Yes. I cite at page 155 of the transcript. This is at the hearing.
She has to be moving beyond
any other evidence.
What's here. Any other pages?
Oh no! I think I have cited the pages of the testimony in this summary here that outline. There may be some other pages in my brief, but I think I've outlined the chief pages where these particular points were made on this one-page summary. Is that
the specific point of did he know she was married or not? Is there
yes.
any evidence other than the page sites you've given us on this summary?
I don't believe so. I believe that's where Henry directly says that he knows it. He just admits it on that page, like 155 and 156. He flat says he knows about it, knew about it.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
That concludes the argument in the first clause.